The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate Live from the College Football Hall of Fame here in Atlanta, Georgia, running it all 4 days in live and living color. Great to have you all along for the ride this AM. I am Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo back in the network studio and in charge of all the sounds gently entering your ear holes this lovely Tuesday morning. Gamecock fans, I am looking for you this morning. We are here at this event because of you. Clemson fans, you hold your pretty little horses because next week we will be in Charlotte, North Carolina for the ACC's Media Days, live in downtown Charlotte, North Carolina, covering your team and the other teams inside of the Atlantic Coast Conference. But it is Gamecock week here on the show, here on the broadcast, here on the station from the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia. And we are going to talk extensively about the Gamecocks coming up and moving forward, in large part because yesterday was Gamecock Day. We had the opportunity to sit down with DQ Smith, a senior defensive back, Nick Barrett, a senior defensive tackle from the Gamecocks. We also picked up some sound from the press conferences and the speeches given by Lenora Sellers and by head coach Shane Beamer. We will run you some sound from those later on. And honestly, they gave us enough. I'll probably be playing Gamecock sound throughout the rest of the week. But today on the docket is, yesterday we knocked out the South Carolina Gamecocks, the LSU Tigers, the Ole Miss Running Rebels, and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Today's teams in the morning session, Auburn and Georgia, the oldest rivalry in the South, will be featured in the AM section, and then Tennessee and Texas roll through in the afternoon session. So we will hear from the head coaches. And before I go any further, I'm going to tell you this great one. Clark Lee, head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores, was here yesterday. And last year, we played a lot of his halftime speeches when he was getting the boys pumped out there in Vanderbilt, out there in Nashville, Tennessee. Hearing that dude speak in person, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a 40-year-old dude. My football days are long behind me. But if I was a 17-year-old kid deciding where to go play football, Clark Lee would be way high on that list. Like, that dude yesterday, just in his speech, I noticed something. He spoke on this podium right here behind me. And for those of you looking on the stream is up and running, by the way, facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, TheFanUpstate on Twitter, TheFanUpstate on YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. You can actually see behind me down here. That's the – where's my finger? There it is. There's the podium that the coaches are speaking from. So most of these guys yesterday, Shane, Lane Kiffin, they went up there and they had their big folder and they opened it up and they had a sheet of paper and had their speech on it. Clark Lee spoke yesterday, Lonzo, for nearly 45 minutes and did not have a note in front of him. Not one. He had a little folder. It never opened. He was never shuffling through paper. He didn't have a bullet point list. He didn't have a speech prepared. That man came off the noggin about the Vanderbilt Commodore football program for 40 minutes at that podium. And I will tell you that a couple of times, because we got a little sound box that we're able to tap in and listen to what is being said, I tapped in for a few minutes towards the end of Clark Lee's speech in the afternoon. And I listened for probably 15, 20 minutes. I would run through a brick wall for that man. You want to talk about it, dude. We talk about this in recruiting, right? Like, yes, NIL's a thing. Yes, transfer portal's a thing. Yes, there are a lot of kids who are going to take a recruitment and are going to commit for the money. There are a lot of kids who are going to commit for a lot of different reasons. I have been saying, the reason a lot of the coaches hate this stuff is not because kids get to do what they want to do. It's because their job's harder now. They have to not just recruit kids out of high school, but they got to recruit kids out of the portal. And you also have to recruit the kids that you've already recruited. You've got to get them a reason to stay, to want to maintain their relationship with your program. One of the things I've said about that is you better find a kid who loves what you do, whether it is because you offer them a degree they can't get anywhere else, whether it is you offer them a locker room environment they can't get anywhere else, whether it is because you offer them amenities that no other school can offer them, whether it's because you got the prettiest cheerleaders in the game, whatever your reason is, you better recruit the kids in your program and make them say, this is the best place for me. It does not matter if another school calls and offers me $4 million to come play for them for 2 years. I love it here, and I'm being taken care of. I'm not going anywhere. But here's the thing. In order to convince a kid of that, I believe you got to have a coach that feels the same way. I believe if you want to convince a kid that they should want to not only come to your school, but they should want to stay at your school and play at your school and be a part of your institution for more than just a year, so that when the phone starts ringing and when the agent says, hey, man, we got this offer and that school's got this and this place over here has signed this deal with this NIL company and I think I can get you in the door, whatever, that kid goes, nah, I love my coach. I'm getting paid enough money here, and I love what is happening at the program. In order to convince a college kid that that is true, I genuinely believe that they have got to be playing for a coach who believes that that is true, a coach that is truly bought into the program and loves what they're doing. This is one of the reasons that I look at a guy like a Brian Kelly at LSU. I don't know if I believe that about that guy. I don't know if I believe that, or LSU was just a place that gave him the most money to get him up out of Notre Dame. But regardless of how you feel about that, I listened to Clark Lee come off the top of the noggin about Vanderbilt Commodore football for 40 minutes yesterday. No notes, no prepared speech. And I mean, unless he just memorized it, which is a possibility. But this dude, he talked about Vanderbilt Commodore football, great one. I don't know how else to put it. He talked about Commodore football like the way I talk about my wife, like the way I talk about bourbon, like the way that I talk about bacon, like my favorite things in life. You could walk up to me if I'm sitting at a bar and I'm sipping on a glass of my favorite bourbon, which right now, Big Angel's Envy guy, Devil's Cut if you can find it. If you walk up to me in a bar, and I'm sitting there sipping a glass of bourbon, and you say, Rob Brown, tell me about Angel's Envy and why you love it, I'll go 40 minutes off the rip about why it's good. If you walk up to me and you say, Rob Brown, tell me about your wife and all the reasons that you are head over heels in love with her, I will go an hour and 40 minutes off the rip about all the ways that she makes me happy and makes my life better for it. That's the way this guy was talking about the Vanderbilt Commodore, the Vanderbilt Commodores yesterday. It was very evident that it is not a sales pitch, it is not fraudulent, it is not something that he is doing just to try to get any attention that he can get for the doors. And trust me, they need it. This dude was a dude who genuinely loves that institution, that program, and the culture that he's building within the football team. I'm not saying that I expect the Vanderbilt Commodores to be competing for an SEC championship anytime soon. I am saying that as long as Clark Lee is there, I would not be shocked over the next few years if we start seeing some guys that might have offers to, I'm not going to say Georgia, but maybe they have offers to an Ole Miss. Maybe they have offers to a Mississippi State. Maybe they have an offer to Arkansas or a Kentucky. Some of those second and third tier SEC schools start to say, I'm going to run through a wall for Clark Lee and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Diego Pavia is fighting in court to be able to stay there and do that more. There are a number of guys on that program that could have transferred out and decided to stay. There's really no point to this for those of you that don't care about Vanderbilt football other than to tell you, Lonzo, when you get a Clark Lee or when you get a Shane Beamer or when you get a Dabo Swinney, when you get one of these guys who it is clear and evident, it is not fraudulent like it is with a lot of coaches, that they genuinely love the institution and the culture they are building at it, that's how you take your college football program to the next level. That's how you get that done. And it was incredible to listen to this guy talk yesterday. I'm going to talk more about that later on in the show, but it is 7:10 in the morning. And now we have to run an accelerated version of that thing we do every morning at 7 o'clock when I tell you the things you're going to be talking about when you get into work, that thing you do when we do this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office this morning and start talking sports with your coworkers. This is what you're going to be talking about. Let us dive right in with item number one. The lawsuit between 2311 Racing and Front Row Motorsports in NASCAR just got a little bit more interesting. If you have been following this story as a NASCAR fan, you already know that it has gotten ugly. Why? Because just a handful of days ago, a judge said that chunks of the lawsuit presented by those two racing outfits, the effectively an antitrust lawsuit being brought forward by Michael Jordan's 2311 and Front Row Motorsports, they said, look, there's nowhere else for us to go race and make money. NASCAR holds a monopoly, and in holding the monopoly, they make us do a bunch of stuff we don't want to do, and that ain't right. Well, the first time that went in front of a judge, the judge said, hold your horses. Actually, they are good because of this, this, and this. Well, that led to a big problem for 2311 and Front Row Motorsports, who hold six collective charters that allow them to just have cars in every NASCAR race. Tomorrow, NASCAR is scheduled to yank those charters from those teams and sell them to other teams. That would be a massive problem for 2311 and Front Row, because if those teams do indeed lose their charter tomorrow, NASCAR has already indicated that they will sell those charters off. And those charters are the only way to ensure that you have cars in every NASCAR race. If those charters are yanked from 2311 and Front Row Motorsports, the drivers for those two organizations would then have to race their way into every race the remainder of the year. So, how are they combating this? Well, 2311 and Front Row have reached back out to the court and yesterday filed for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction to be recognized as charter institutions for the remainder of 2025. Effectively, they have said to the court, look, there's a lot more to this lawsuit. There's a lot that has to be said, has to be done, has to be debated, and has to be ruled on. And we don't think NASCAR should be allowed to pull our charter and sell them off while we are still going through this process, because if they do, we're boned, dude. So they have submitted for a temporary restraining order and injunction against NASCAR to prevent them from pulling and selling the charters. If they do not get that, it is bad news for 2311 and Front Row. If they do get it, they will likely be allowed to race the rest of this year while that court issue goes the rest of the way to the top. We're going to circle back around to that later because that is a very interesting story. Let's get, though, to item number two. It is All-Star Weekend here in Atlanta, Georgia, and festivity numero uno last night, the Home Run Derby. Seattle Mariners star and current MLB home run leader Cal Raleigh became the first catcher to win the All-Star Home Run Derby and the second Seattle Mariner behind Ken Griffey Jr. He won it twice. Cal, the big dumper Raleigh, is now Mariner number two. Raleigh was pitched to by his father, Todd, the former coach of Tennessee and Western Carolina. Raleigh's younger brother, Todd Raleigh Jr., did the catching. Cal's dad said after the event, quote, anybody that's ever played baseball as a kid dreams of stuff like this. I dreamed of it. He dreamed of it. And when you're a parent, you look at it differently because you want your kid to be healthy. Raleigh was almost eliminated in the opening round when he and Athletics outfielder Brent Rooker tied with 17 home runs, but the tiebreaker was the longest home run hit. Cal Raleigh's home run traveled 470.61 feet to Rooker's 470.53. He won by 0.8 feet. And as we all know, those measurements are just very exact and precise, like just spot on exact and precise. Calarali was able to escape the opening round. He would face in the finals Tampa's junior Caminero. The two of them had an absolute slugfest. Caminero was down three with one out to go and could not find the outfield fence. O'Neill Cruz was a monster, put on a show, including a 513-foot home run, the longest of the evening. He is the sixth player to hit a Derby home run of 500-plus feet since StatCast started recording back in 2016, only the second to do so outside of Coors Field. I'm going to say one more thing as a fan, and then we'll get to item number three. I've been to Truist Park many times. I have seen many a home run hit out to right field. They got a restaurant out there called the Chop House. It's like a little steak kind of sit-down, nice restaurant, but you're in right field. And that's a home run target. I've seen a lot of guys hit a ball into the Chop House. So this man hit one onto the roof of the Chop House. You have to go 500 to get to the roof. O'Neill Cruz hit a dong that sailed to the back of the roof of the Chop House. I was watching this on my laptop in a hotel room last night and said out loud, oh my God, that's how hard he hit that baseball last night. All-star game, of course, tonight in Atlanta, Georgia, your three Braves representatives. Starting in the outfield, Ronald Acuna Jr. Reserve at first base is Matty Ice Baby Olsen, who was in the Derby and got eliminated in the first round last night. And, of course, on reserve, though he will not play, is Chris Sale, who was in a Cy Young form before he fractured two ribs. Still healing from that. He will be out. Let's wrap it up with item number three. We're going to talk a little bit about this coming up more in the remainder of the show, but this was a major college football revelation here from SEC Media Days yesterday. SEC Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey at the microphone said that there is a growing chance that the college football playoff stays at 12 teams. He said that he and Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti spoke 4 of 5 days last week and acknowledged that the SEC and the Big Ten are in very different positions in terms of belief of the format of the extension. We have talked about this quite a bit. The Big Ten is pushing for that 4-4-1-1-2 model where the SEC and the Big Ten would each get 4 automatic qualifiers. The SEC and the Big 12 would each get 2 automatic qualifiers. The Group of 5 would get 1, and the rest would be determined at large. But Greg Sankey seems to be now saying that the conference will follow the wishes of the college football coaches in that conference and seek a 5+11 model that would give the 5 highest-ranked conference champions an automatic qualifier, and the other 11 positions would be the next 11 highest-rated teams. And Greg Sankey said yesterday that those two conferences needed to get in line are not yet, and that could push college football playoff expansion perhaps back a year, maybe longer. I don't think so, because at the end of the day, they're both going to make a buttload of money if football expands. And we all know at the end of the day, I don't care if you're Greg Sankey or a coach or an AD or a TV exec or anybody else that wears a suit in this world, expansion means more money. And that is the number one driving factor. So is that enough to get Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti back on the same page? We'll find out. We'll talk about it. But when we come back, Gamecock fans, I'm looking for you. What is it? Shane Beamer said yesterday to Paul Feinbaum, we have everything we need to accomplish what we want to accomplish this year, but he never said what that is. So I am going to put you in the shoes of the head ball coach. Gamecock fans, what is it? What do you think is the expectation, the goal to set, that you will be able to say at the end of this year, we were successful? We'll talk more about that. We'll play you some sound we picked up yesterday. We'll tell you who we got coming up today. All that on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate live from SEC Media Days. Upstate live from the College Football Hall of Fame. It is SEC Media Days presented by our friends at Ingles. Low prices, love the savings. We are very grateful to Ingles for helping us out and getting us here. South Carolina fans, I have asked you a very simple question today, and I am looking for your answers. You can text them to the Hub City Spartan Burger text line at 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. I do have the text line up and running, and I promise I will be a good boy. I will be better today about reading your text and responding. Yesterday, we were kind of finding our way around, learning the ropes a little bit here at the CFPHOF. So today, a little bit back to norm, a little bit more in line with the way the show ordinarily runs. So shoot us a text, 844-326-3663. I have asked you this morning. Shane Beamer said to Paul Feinbaum yesterday, we have everything we need to accomplish all we want to accomplish. And my question for you is, what is that? What is that for you? What is it that South Carolina will need to accomplish this year for you to say, we have accomplished all that we want to accomplish? Is it an 8-win season? Is it a 9-win season? Is it a 10-win season? In the face of one of the most difficult back halves to the schedule in recent memory? Is it an appearance in the SEC championship game? Is it an SEC championship victory, knowing that Texas is a national championship front runner, that Georgia is a national championship front runner, that Alabama, who you will play this year in Williams-Brice Stadium, is a championship hopeful, that LSU, who you will play in Baton Rouge, Louisiana this year, is a championship hopeful, knowing the odds are stacked the way that they are stacked for you? What is it that Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks need to accomplish for you to say that we accomplished it? Warren has checked in on the live stream this morning, which you can do as well at facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, the Fan Upstate on Twitter, or the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Warren says, given the success that the Gamecocks had last year, Beamer has to make the playoffs. And he put has to make the playoffs in all caps. We got a text just a few minutes ago from Jim. Jim said on the text line, Rob, playoffs are the bottom line, end quote. So a couple of Gamecocks out of the gate saying that the expectation is playoff. And I don't think that that is unfair. You're a 10-win team last year. As we have pointed out a number of times, and so has just about everybody else, this is a team that, if either one of the two games that I think we consider the painful losses last year, we are talking about the Alabama game where you had them all but dead to rights in Tuscaloosa, but a couple of mental mistakes late in that game cost you a win. And then the LSU game at home at Willie B last year. That was a game that felt like it was all but won, but a couple of, we'll say, questionable flags down the stretch ended up costing you a win there. Either one of those two L's flipped to a dub, and South Carolina's in the playoffs. Now, you want to take a step forward. We know that. You want to take a step forward every year until you are on the top of the mountain, and then you want to fight your ass off to stay there. That's just how the world works. Well, if one game away from the playoff last year, and if one game away from the playoff with two L's that felt, I want to say, either unnecessary or unjustifiable, kept you there, then the next step in that progression is to make the playoffs. And then the next step in that progression is to win a playoff game. And then the next step in that progression is to win two playoff games. So I do not feel like it is necessarily unfair to say that making the playoffs is it. My question is, what do we look at in terms of the conference results? Are you expecting to be in the conference championship? Are you expecting to be a contender in the final week of the season? The more I've thought about this, and I still want your answer, Gamecock fans, 844-326-3663. You can text them or you can call into the radio program. So I think this is where I've landed. I'm going to give you my results, and then I want yours as well. I think where I've landed is this. I would like to see South Carolina as a playoff contender in week 10. I'm not going to say in week 12 or 13 because, again, you do have the Texases, you do have the Georgias. But with Texas playing Georgia in the regular season, with teams like Tennessee, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, LSU, all scattered across the landscape, and all of the front runners for the conference championship, and I think that the two predominant are Georgia and Texas in a rematch. With all of those things on the line, I think there are going to be some losses. I do not think that there will be a 12-0 team in the Southeastern Conference this year. I don't think there's a 12-0 team out there. Texas has got Ohio State and Georgia. Georgia obviously has Texas. They've got Florida down in the cocktail party. Alabama's got LSU, South Carolina. South Carolina's got, Alabama and LSU as well. I don't think there's a 12-0 team in this conference. I think there may be one maximum two 11-1 teams in this conference. I think there could be a gaggle of 10-2 teams in this conference. And if South Carolina is in that group, even if there is a 12-0 and an 11-1 and they lock it down, if South Carolina is in that 10-2 group, if South Carolina is in that gaggle of teams that is down the stretch, when I say down the stretch, I mean out of turn four and the checkered flag's in sight. If they are in that group of teams, that's a good regular season result for me. That's a regular season result I'm happy with. And then I don't think saying make the playoffs is unfair. Now, I also want to keep in mind that when you talk about making the playoffs, it is going to require outpacing a lot of very good teams. Penn State out of the Big Ten, playoff hopeful. Clemson out of the ACC. I don't think playoff hopeful. I think they're getting in as ACC champs, but there is also SMU, who was there last year and wants to get back. The Texas Longhorns, the Georgia Bulldogs, the Ohio State Buckeyes, the LSU Tigers, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the Oregon Ducks, the Alabama Crimson Tide. I'll give you a couple of other teams that I think are kind of, Lonzo, tell me if this is fair, in the same, we want to be in that mix as South Carolina. I think Illinois is in that group this year. I think Arizona State's in that group this year. I think Iowa State's in that group this year. I think Texas Tech is in that group this year. I don't think Kurt Cignetti and his Indiana Hoosiers have plans on going anywhere. Kansas State is in that group this year. The Florida Gators are in that group this year. There's Miami out of the ACC, completely blanked on Miami along with SMU and Clemson. They are in that group this year. Louisville out of the ACC, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, all in the SEC, all in that same gaggle of teams. And I would go one further. I'm going to add one more. You're probably going to disagree, great one. I think Michigan, despite all of the drama, there's a ton of athletes in the Big House. I think they are going to expect to be competing for that 12th playoff spot this year as well. The point that I'm making here is, I think for Warren to say, given the success the Gamecocks had last year, Beamer has to make the playoffs, is fair. I think the expectation of getting in is fair this year. But I also want to point out, and I said this to Colin Diesel, I'll say it to you, Lonzo, we'll get your reaction, we'll take a break. I think the context, if the team misses it, I think the context of how they miss it matters. If they go 10-2, and they're just on the outside looking in, and there's three other SEC teams that are 10-2 and they get in, if they ended up with the strength of schedule and they didn't play head-to-head or whatever, I think there may be a point that you look and you go, unfortunately, we're not considered in that upper echelon of nationally recognized college teams, and we've got to earn our way into that spot, and this is part of the lumps you take. I think the context of missing will be important. I think if you're 10-2, you're the first team out, you're number 13, and people, I don't think you're going to come back and say that's a failure, but if you miss and you're 9-3 and there's a bunch of 10-2 teams, then I think you can say that's not what we were going for. The only thing I would caution South Carolina fans is playoff optimism, playoff hopes, absolutely fine. But if you don't make it, Look at the context at which you were left out. Don't automatically start banging the drum that Shane failed.
All right, so the thing is, if you're on the bubble again for 2 years in a row, I mean, you've already been there last year. That there were some people upset that South Carolina didn't get in and sure. thought that they should have. You don't want to be there again. The best way to do that is to be in the SEC championship game. You don't have to win it. You just got to be in it, and you're guaranteed to be in there. Who wants to be on the bubble?
I don't disagree.
And I know I'm not sure you think that it's in the realm of possibility. I do. I absolutely do.
I think it's in the realm of possibility, but I do think it is a long shot possibility, right? Like it's a that's a big
ask. Yeah, but 2 years ago you couldn't have said that. So that's how much this team has progressed, that they are in the conversation now. And if you're in the conversation, that means you have the ability to get there.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree. I think that if nothing else, right now, July 15th, 2025, we are 49 whatever days away from the start of the football season. The last day of next month, we're playing college football right here in Atlanta, Georgia. I think on July 15th, before we start really pounding this conversation, I would say to South Carolina fans, take a step back, look at where you were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Look at where you are now and see the vast improvement. You are being discussed on the SEC network as a team that could play a role. Was that the case 4 years ago? I don't think so. I would also say it will be important to do at the end of the season the same. If you miss and you're 10-2 and there were 9 at 10-2 teams all on that bubble and you don't get in for whatever reason, maybe you had a bad loss, then I think we can discuss whether the context says it was a success or failure. But Lonzo's also right. Backdoor your way in. Go get 10-2. Go get 11-1. Go get Georgia and Texas to take a dumb loss somewhere. Get yourself into that game, and this is a whole different conversation. When we come back, yesterday got the chance to speak with DQ Smith, senior defensive back for the Gamecocks of South Carolina. I'll play that interview for you next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Yesterday, I got the opportunity to sit down with a couple of South Carolina Gamecocks. One of them was senior defensive back DQ Smith. And I'm going to tell you, I absolutely loved this interview. He was a fantastic discussion, gave us a lot in terms of the mentality of the defense, his thoughts on Shane Beamer, and we had a little fun too. Here is my interview yesterday with South Carolina Gamecock senior defensive back DQ Smith.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, that wasn't supposed to stop right there. Let me reload that great one here. Give me just a second.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate, as it is SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia, at the College Football Hall of Fame. And, of course, Monday belongs to the Gamecocks. And also there's some other teams here, but we ain't worried about that right now. We're worried about the team that plays right down the road from Greenville in Columbia, South Carolina. And joining us now is a young man who will be repping the Garnet and Black out on the field. He is DQ Smith joining us here. What's up, big fella? How we feeling, man?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. How's the car wash? You tired of it yet? Be real.
Man, I ain't tired of it yet. It's all a pleasure to be here.
I like that. I like that. First off, y'all look good, man. This is how we pull the custom look together.
Well, this is kind of a last minute suit, but gray is what I wanted to go with. So
hang on. That's last minute,
yes,
and you pulled it together like
yes,
that?
Sir, last minute.
I need to get a last minute guy. That ain't a bad look, man.
Yes, sir.
Talk to me a little bit about, let's start with this, being at the College Football Hall of Fame. This is my first time here. I walked in this morning at about 5:45. Man, I saw the helmet wall out there when up here and started seeing the exhibits. I'm not going to lie, I grew up loving college football. Kind of got goosebumps a little bit.
Yeah,
what's
yeah.
it like for you, not just to be representing the Gamecocks at this event, but to see the history of college football and know that you guys have a chance to be a part of that?
Man, it's definitely a pleasure to be here. You know, Coach Beamer, though, he picked three guys to be here. He picked one of me, so he picked one of those guys was me. So just obviously just being here is a pleasure. It's an honor. And then obviously, you know, seeing all of this stuff, the history, man, it's amazing to be in here because, you know, a lot of college football players don't even get see what this building is, and I'm one of those players, so it's amazing to be here.
Talk to me a little about the expectations that you have for yourself. You're going into your fourth year defensive back. You had some huge games last year. That Alabama game, I know we have 10 tackles in that game. I mean, you have had some standout moments, and now obviously the expectations for you from Coach Beamer, from the fans, and I assume from yourself, little bit higher this year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Every year it gets a little higher. But this year, you know, it's a little different, you know, because my last year, senior year, I was the best year. I expect it to be my best year I'm putting the work for. So my expectations are definitely higher this year.
What's that mean for it to be your last year? What's it mean knowing that you got 12 guaranteed games and trying to earn a few more after that, and this is your last shot to do that? What's that mean to you?
It means a lot, man, because, you know, after I'm done playing, last year's the year you're really going to look at. So this going out strong, going out with a legacy, living a legacy that players always remember you as, even the coaches. So just making people miss you around the building, what we talk about a lot, leaving a legacy. So just knowing that those 12 games, you know, guaranteed games, you know, they're going to go by real fast, so just making the most out of those.
Let me ask you kind of the overall, the broad question. I know it's kind of open-ended, but what's it mean to be a Gamecock? What's it mean to be a part of this program?
It means a lot because, you know, the players that come through here, the history that we have as Gamecocks, you know, just everything about it, the state as a whole, you know, the fan base, everybody, you know, the alumni always comes back. You know, it's a Gamecock, just a hard-working team that's, I'm glad I picked because, you know, I fit in so perfectly with them.
Talk to me a little bit about this defense. We know you lost some guys like Nick Eamon Warrior headed up to the league. There's going to be some turnover at some certain key positions. As far as y'all's ability to bond from last year, going through a bowl game, now you've had spring, we're working our way to fall. Talk to me a little bit about bonding as a unit, especially with the new guys that are stepping into big-time shoes.
Well, that's the first thing we have to do. We have to bond with those guys to fit where they needed to be fitted. So just bonding with those guys, getting to know them, making them as comfortable as possible because we're going to need them this year. That's how we was as a group last year. We was all close, and that's what we got to do this year with the new guys, whether it's transfers or people that's coming from out of high school. So getting close to those guys is the first thing we have to do, and then we'll leave from there.
I'm glad you brought that up. I've been kind of curious about it because you talk about that bonding experience being the most important thing, and you've got freshmen coming out of high school, but now more than ever before, there's transfer portal guys. And I know you guys maybe didn't hit the portal as hard as some teams do, but there are those guys that have got to come and fill in. So not just having a bond, but having a bond with guys from different schools and maybe came from different cultures. What's that experience like? What is that experience like, especially when you are expected to be a leader specifically of the defense?
That experience is definitely can be challenging at times, you know, because it's a new person coming into town, but as much as I want to win, you know, we have to be close to the team. So you got to take that step and talking to them. When they do get comfortable around us, or, you know, around the team, then, you know, obviously you do their job and, you know, they're comfortable now and they become leaders now because a lot of guys from the transfer portal, they're guys that played a lot of college football and they came here. So obviously they know the playbook. So just really getting them comfortable, trying to get to know them as a person because on the field we have to be close in order for us to be successful.
All right, let's talk about team expectations. Yes, this has been a team that Coach Beamer's been there for a handful of years now, and it seems like we've been taking a step up in terms of expectations every year. I've said on my show, this is no longer a prove-it year. This is no longer a, well, let's make a bowl game and kind of set that as a foundation. It feels to me that you guys have expectations of maybe shooting a little bit higher. Does it feel that way in the locker room with the boys?
Yes, it's been feeling that way since last year. Last year, obviously, we fell short of the college football playoff, but we felt like we should have been in the playoff before the season even started. We were going to be a top 12 team. That's what we said we were going to be. And, you know, we fell a little short. But this year, we know what it takes. We know that the small details, like last year, the small details ended up in us not making the college football playoff from the games we lost by 1 or 2 points. So just knowing that, focus on the small details this offseason, really getting into that so we won't have to go through that feeling again.
I think one of the stories I heard Coach Beamer tell earlier today, he said that after that Alabama loss, and I know that one had to sting for a hot minute, but he said after that loss, you and some of the senior leaders from last year kind of stood around and said, we're not losing another one. Like, we're dedicated to perfection the rest of the ride. And he said it stood out to him that it felt that way, that it felt like everybody bought into that. Has that momentum carried over from last year into this year, and have you been able to kind of ride that high?
Yes, absolutely. After that game last year, you know, we did come together as a team before we even left the stadium. Like, yo, if we're going to make the college football playoff, what we said we was going to do before the season, we cannot lose another game. And, you know, we all stood on that, and we all came together and said that's what we were going to do, and we didn't lose from there. So just understanding that, and then that momentum coming into this year, you know, we try not to focus on what we did last year or whatever. So just having a new identity, having new faces in the locker room now, you know, it's just about us getting close. And when that time comes again, you know, we'll make a new goal for ourselves and, you know, go from there.
I know everybody in this building has been asking you about Lenora Sellers.
and I'm going to be next in line because that young man, he kind of feels like he's special. I've been playing a little college football on the XB1 a little bit. Yes, my man's like a Michael Vick Madden 04 cheat code right now.
Yes.
Talk to me about this kid.
This kid is magical, man. He can make, like I've been telling everybody else, he can make nothing into something. We see it all the time in practice, and, you know, it's only a matter of time before people see it in games, but this is something we see all the time. So it's just like just seeing it, it's something I never saw before because he can throw it, he can run it, he can run through you, you know what I'm saying? He can just make anything happen. Like, a lot of people be comparing him to Cam Newton. That's what I see in him as well. So just, yeah.
I think we all saw a little bit of it in that Clemson game last year, especially that fourth quarter, especially those last couple of drives. I know the Clemson fans are – not thrilled about that. But what's the growth and development been like for him? And obviously nobody's going to know that offense better than the boys lined up against him in practice all the time. Talk to me a little bit about the growth on the other side of the ball through this offseason.
Offensive growth side on the ball, you know, Lenore's obviously he's going to grow. He's going to continue to grow. It was his first year really playing a full season. So just seeing that, man, it's really a lot to try to get past that. But, you know, he's always getting better. He's always working. You can see it each and every day. So just seeing that. And then the guys around him as well, they're looking at him. He's leading them in the right direction, whether it's vocal or just by his actions. So they're leading him the right way. Well, he's leading them the right way, you know, offensive line, receivers, no matter what it is. And they're all following. So it's going
to
be great.
You mentioned last year you guys said you wanted to make the college football playoffs. That Alabama game goes different, you're probably in. That LSU game goes different, you're probably in. There's a couple of those that felt that way. How important does it feel this year for y'all to make sure that in those contests you're doing the little things to get it done, but more importantly, to make sure that this South Carolina team is included in the dance this year?
It's very important because we know when we get into these games, it's more like, we know what it's feeling like to lose a game like this, especially if it comes down to the wire. So we have to give a little bit more extra effort. You know, we know these ACC games, they always come down to the wire in most cases. So just knowing how to finish games, practice that more in practice. And so when that situation do come, you know, we'll be prepared for it.
All right, you get the chance to end a game, and you can end it on a pick six, you can end it on a strip sack fumble recovery, or you can end it with the offense going the distance to score a touchdown to walk off. Which one do you want?
Oof. Definitely pick six.
Gotta be a pick six.
Gotta be a pick six. Yeah, that's definitely a different feeling right there because their offense has the ball. We don't know what they're going to do with it. And he throw a pick six and get the crowd riled up. So definitely a pick six.
Talk to me about playing in Willoughby. I've been in the upstate for 5 years. I've gotten to come for two or three games. When I moved here, if you'd asked me to put together the list of, like, the toughest place to play in college football, it's the same. It was Death Valley and Baton Rouge. It was Ben Hill Griffin down in Florida. I've been to that stadium 3 times for home games, and I tell every radio station and every show I'm on around the country, if you don't have Willoughby in your top 5, you're wrong.
Yeah,
what's it like to be on that field?
Definitely got to go to Willoughby. It's an experience I feel like everybody should get a part of, especially a night game. Well, really, it don't matter what time, it's always rocking. But night games in particular because, you know, it's just different. Like, the towels go up, the music, everything, the cocky. It's an amazing experience, even from the tailgating. I've seen videos of tailgating just – the love they have for the fans, the love they have for each other, man, it's amazing to be there.
All right, last one, I'll let you go.
Yes, sir.
Do the boys start playing a little college football in the dorm room, and who's the guy?
Me.
You?
Me.
Straight up, no question.
Yeah, that was easy. That was me. That's me. I'm the guy.
Who gives you the best? I feel like that's the QB has an inherent advantage.
Lenore's? Lenore's giving me the best advantage, the best competition when I play.
Okay.
He don't beat me, though, because I play quarterback as well, so. I know what he's looking at, we both got the same, a little bit of knowledge. He got the college knowledge. I got the high school knowledge, though. So, yeah, it's definitely me and Lenore.
Sometimes you just got to have a little bit of that dog in you.
That's what it is. Hey, that's all it is.
DQ Smith heading into his final year with Gamecocks playing defensive back. All right, listen, I know what you're going to say, but I don't want you to say it. I want you to give me the real answer.
Okay.
What's the game you got circled on the calendar?
All of them.
No, come on, bro.
All of them. I'm trying to tell you. All of them. Last year, hey, all of them important.
Okay.
Yes,
I like it. DQ Smith, my man, thanks for coming by. Good this year. Good luck this year. I think you guys got potential to do something special. Yeah. I'm pulling for you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You got it. DQ Smith of the South Carolina Gamecocks here at SEC Media Days in Atlanta. There you go. There was our interview with DQ Smith. I apologize the audio being a little off there, but I will tell you that later on today, in fact, shortly after the show, I will have that full interview posted. So for those of you that maybe didn't get the best quality. I will have better quality audio of that interview posted for you on our social media channels at TheFanUpstate, at TheFanUpstate. That will be posted shortly after the conclusion of the show, as will the interview we did with Nick Barrett, defensive tackle for the South Carolina Gamecocks, and Jay Busby of Yahoo Sports, all in on the show yesterday. Coming up later on this afternoon after the show, Peter Burns of the SEC Network is going to stomp by. David Nuno of Aggies Live, the Rivals site for the Texas A&M Aggies. He has been covering SEC football for longer than I have been in the game at this point. Dear friend of mine in the business, David Nuno will stop by, and I will let you know what other interviews we acquire throughout the course of the day, which we will post on our social media channels and also have some of them for you later on. In the final hour of the show, as of now, Abe Gordon of 92.9 The Game in Atlanta will be swinging by to talk with us live sometime in the 9 o'clock hour as well. All of that coming up over the next few days as we are live at the College Football Hall of Fame for Southeastern Conference Media Days. Day numero dos underway as the upstairs area is starting to fill up. We will have the SEC's chief of officials coming up here in about half an hour. We'll hear what he has to say. We've got Georgia and Auburn in our morning session, so we'll hear from Hugh Freeze and Kirby Smart. You know who we're going to hear from right now? Ladies and gentlemen, the best sports flash in the world belongs to Lonzo.
Yeah, it does, but I'm keeping that one. You guys don't get the best one. But you get this one, though. Your 2025 Home Run Derby champion is Seattle's Cal, the big dumper, Raleigh. Raleigh faced Tampa's junior Caminero in the final, hitting 18 to Caminero's 15 in the last round. Raleigh becomes just the second Mariner to win the event behind Ken Griffey Jr., who won the event twice. New York Jets have signed wide receiver the Garrett Wilson to a four-year, $130 million contract to stay with the team, including $90 million guaranteed. The contract marks the first time a wide receiver has been paid more than $31 million after just three seasons in the league. The MLB All-Star game is tonight at Truist Park in Atlanta, Georgia. The Braves send Ronald Acuna Jr. as their lone starter, as well as first baseman Matt Olson as a reserve. Pitcher Chris Sale was also selected but will not play as he continues to recover from fractured ribs.